I'm telling these tears go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom, I can't move.
What's up, Wisconsin?
Freedom, freedom, where are you?
It's Debate Thursday. All right, on a scale of 1 to 10, Brian, how howler monkey slinging guano crazy is the debate going to be?
All right. I have a love-hate relationship with reality TV in general.
Oh, this is reality TV on steroids.
Yeah, that's what it is. I'm not going to ease into that analogy. We're just accepting the analogy there because that's what it is. It's not like anyone's going to go and say anything that's going to make anybody move one way or another, because we've done the experiment. We've asked Trump supporters, could Trump literally say anything that would make you go, nah, no? And is there anything that at this point that Biden might say that make us go, you know what, Trump is really a better idea?
So what's the point?
It's fun.
Fun?
Right? I'm just saying that. Think of the ratings.
I'll be interested to see how many people watch. I'd also be interested to see like what the breakdown of those watching is. In other words, are you watching out of purient, let me watch the bloodbath occur?
And will they include streaming in those numbers too?
Right.
Because somehow we're in a streaming place where everybody's cutting the cord and people are watching on their phones most of the time, but yet they still use the ratings that are on the actual
Nielsen
network.
You know what the Biden administration needs to look into? The monopoly that Nielsen has on ratings.
Yeah, I knew a guy once who did the installs for the boxes.
Yes.
But literally, other than that, I have never met one person who has ever had a Nielsen box, ever. If you or anyone you know has had a Nielsen box, please give us
a call. Let us know. Okay, we are going to talk about the debate. We are going to ask you, are you watching? Why are you all that kind of stuff before the show is out? But again, fire hose. Every day it's a fire hose of news. This Supreme Court, we were talking about it yesterday. I think we'll end up going down as probably the single most impactful Supreme Court term in modern American history. Just today, we had decisions on abortion, the opioid epidemic, whether or not federal agencies can use tribunals to help with regulatory enforcement, or if they actually have to go into federal court and file lawsuits, as well as what was called the good neighbor air pollution rule under the EPA. If you think about those things together, right, like just pause, it's a French word, a pause, you pause for a moment, abortion, opioid epidemic, how federal agencies enforce their rules, and clean air. That's just today. I'm going to focus in on two of those cases. The abortion case, certainly, because I do not want anyone out there to get the misapprehension that the Supreme Court has somehow seen the light. They haven't. They're still off out in the beet patch doing crazy stuff. Women, our rights and black people's rights and gay people's rights, they should be defined based on the traditional rights that were essential to the founding of our country. Well, that leaves a lot of us out in the cold. That's effectively what the fundamental theoretical approach of this Supreme Court is, which is stupid. So I'll talk about the abortion case, and I also want to talk about the opioid case and the decision that came down today, because that was an enormous part of my work on behalf of Milwaukee County and, frankly, the entire state of Wisconsin. We as Wisconsinites and on behalf of Milwaukee County taxpayers and residents, which has an impact beyond Milwaukee County because people travel into Milwaukee County to buy opioids, negotiated one of the single largest settlements in the country on a sort of population proportion basis and got one of the largest cuts for local governments, which goes to every single local government in the state of Wisconsin that participated. So we want to talk about those things today, but it is also day 19 of Joe Biden's top 100. This week's theme, healthcare and the overall health and wellness of the country, which necessitates a discussion about guns, obviously. And we've got Rob Henken, the president of the Wisconsin Policy Forum, joining us. We're going to talk a little bit about Medicaid. They have a report that's going to be coming out soon. And then we're going to round out the show, everybody, with, you know, a little discussion with you all about the debate tonight. And don't forget, Civic Media has got you covered for debate, for the debate listening this evening. Starting at 7:30, you'll hear Todd Alba, host of the Todd Alba Show, as well as our news director, Terry Bell, giving you some of their thoughts on the debate leading up to kickoff. First pitch. The first verbal bar being thrown at 8 p.m. local time this evening. I, of course, will be live and in living color at the Barrymore Theater in Madison with the hosts of the Devil's Advocates Radio, Mike Crute and Dom Salvia. I'll be hanging out there before they say, Maggie, we want to hear from you. So you can come say hi. We can hang out. We can talk shop or, you know, about the Brewers, which, hey, do you know how many games they're up on the Cubs, Brian?
No, it doesn't really matter at this point. The Cubs have decided we're going to win or lose as many one-run games as possible in the most horrible, disgusting, oh my God, I cannot believe I stayed up and watched this three nights in a row way possible. So yeah, good for the Brewers. Great. Keep going. Honestly, don't ever stop winning. Good for you guys.
You heard it here from Cubs fan Brian Kelly. Go Brew Crew. Yeah, they're up 11 games on the Cubs, 6 games on St. Louis. They're playing the Cubs at home.
Just beat St. Louis, please. Just beat them so hard and
so
make them
hard.
Cry.
It's a point of agreement when it comes just to baseball between Brian and
I. Make them sweat in their cutoffs.
Yeah, up 11 on the Cubs. They're playing the Cubs at home. First pitch at 7:10. If you live within the listening radius of WRCE in Richland Center, 107.7 FM, 1450 AM, WRJN in Racine, 99 FM, 1400 AM, and Kenosha, 98.1 FM, WISS, 98.3 FM, 1100 AM, or WCQM in Park Falls, 98.3. You can always find your Brewers there. All right, well, let's jump in, shall we? And before we start talking about the abortion decision today and what it did and didn't do and how the decision was announced or inadvertently announced yesterday, what's going on with Supreme Court IT? The second abortion-related decision that's sort of leaked.
Dobbs was leaked.
Anyways, it's important that we provide some context, right? And context here is key. Following the Dobbs decision, because of Donald Trump, Roe v. Wade was overturned because of Donald Trump, because he stacked the court with far-right conservatives totally out of step with average Americans like you and I, the elite of the elites, the ivory tower folks, the bribery-friendly Supreme Court, the bribe-taking Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas. Because of Donald Trump, here are a couple of examples of what has happened to women's health care in this country. In Texas, one woman had a miscarriage in the lobby restroom of an emergency room because the front desk staff refused to check her in. In Florida, a woman was sent home from the hospital and then miscarried and lost half the blood in her body over the course of a day because of Donald Trump. And in Idaho, at least 6 women experiencing life-threatening pregnancy complications had to be airlifted into neighboring states for emergency care because of Donald Trump. Donald Trump's Supreme Court is killing women and killing babies, causing and inflicting incalculable harm. And let us not forget, Donald Trump thinks that women should be punished when they seek the care that they need.
Do you believe in punishment for abortion? Yes or no, as a principle?
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah, there has to be some form.
10 cents, 10 years,
I don't know. That I don't know.
Because you don't think about anything deeply. Here, I'll just make this debate prediction. Donald Trump doesn't know anything about anything. He may be able to squeak out two or three specific things because they've been drilled into his head by his advisors. But once he gets going and there's no teleprompter feeding him the information, totally unhinged. I'm going to describe a little bit about why the Supreme Court decision that is allowing for now emergency abortions to take place in Idaho is no cause for celebration. I'm going to tell you what we're facing with respect to the opioid epidemic, thanks to the Supreme Court. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You're always welcome. 855-75-CIVIC. 855-752-4842.
Keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
If the issue were to come before me, if I am fortunate enough to be confirmed and the issue were to come before me, the first question would be the question that we've been discussing, and that's the issue of stare decisis.
Can't buy me love.
Wisconsin. Happy Debate Thursday. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, if you've got a smart speaker at home, all you need to do is look at it and tell it to play your local civic media affiliate. For example, Alexa, play WGBW. Boop, and there will be. I love doing that. It's fun. I guess give me a little AI, not too much AI, just enough.
A nice blend.
A nice blend. We've been talking about the flurry of activity coming out of the Supreme Court, probably one of its momentous terms in modern history. Today, ruling that emergency abortions can continue in Idaho. Make no mistake, this is not the Supreme Court saying, well, you know, maybe we might have gone a little too far. No, no, no. They just dismissed the case as, quote, improvidently granted, which basically means we thought we should rule on it before, but we've now changed our minds. That's what that means. There's no analysis. It's just a one-page dismissal. Right? Boop. That's it. And the interesting thing about Idaho's law is that it permits abortions in the case of incest, rape, or when it is, quote, necessary to prevent the death of the pregnant woman. You might be thinking, oh, that's good. That's good. No, 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 no. Being a lawyer, I will tell you that, quote, preventing the death of the pregnant woman is not the same as protecting the life and health of the mother or the pregnant person. It is different. It literally means that a woman needs to be bleeding out on the table or near or complete organ failure in order to make an abortion legal. You have to be dying in Idaho. And what was remarkable today is that Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson actually read her dissent from the bench, which is highly unusual, and it means that there is profound, profound disagreement. Here's what Justice Jackson said. By the way, we're picking our favorite Supreme Court justices. She's mine.
She's good.
She says it. She tells it like it is.
Which I greatly appreciate as a layperson.
Yeah. Here you go. Justice Jackson wrote federal law. This is under EMTALA, which is the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act, EMTALA. It basically says you show up in an ER dying, they can't turn you away, right? Even if you don't have insurance, they have to treat you, okay? Here's what Justice Jackson wrote. The federal law unambiguously requires that hospital receiving Medicare funding provide whatever treatment is necessary to stabilize a patient, including pregnant women. When the court allowed Idaho's abortion ban to temporarily go into effect, a, quote, months-long catastrophe, end quote, ensued that could have been averted, she wrote. Instead, she noted, quote, Idaho physicians were forced to step back and watch as their patients suffered or arrange for their patients to be airlifted out. Again, all of this points to this fact that this reality of why do the five old farts, old white guys on the Supreme Court and one old black guy on the Supreme Court, why do they get to decide whose life matters more, the unborn baby or the woman? Because that's what they're choosing amongst. Don't take my word for it. Let's look at what Justice Samuel Alito wrote, because of course he dissented from the court's dismissal of the Idaho case. He, of course, argued that they should have taken the case up and decided it on the merits. But he wrote this. Federal law requires hospitals receiving Medicare to, quote, treat, not abort, an unborn child. So like, I just want you to all to get our heads around like the worldview difference here. You have Justice Jackson saying emergency rooms need to follow federal law and stabilize patients, including pregnant women. And if stabilizing the patient requires an abortion, that's what federal law requires. And over here in religious zealot land, Samuel Alito's like, no. They have to intercede and maybe let the woman die because they have a federal law obligation to protect the unborn child. That difference, everyone, is why you must leave these decisions to women, their families, and doctors. Because all due respect, even if I shared the same religious beliefs as Samuel Alito, he doesn't get to decide whether I or my unborn baby dies. For real, dude? For real. Nanya.
And the other thing that I don't think is mentioned enough, they're coming from a point of view that is assuming a desire to murder a child. They're coming from a point of view arguing as if someone is trying to kill children. And that is absolutely the furthest thing from this situation. In fact, in every one of these situations that requires an abortion for the woman to live, pretty much every single one of those, like 99.99999, is all expected and wanted and desired pregnancies that have been nurtured to full term. I can't.
And I'll go even further. Women who decide to exercise reproductive freedom and full autonomous control of their bodies, who want to access abortion care. I don't know any women, and I know probably if I sat down and counted over 15 women that have shared with me that they've had an abortion, not a single one of them was like, oh, super, no problem. I'll just go get an abortion. No sweat. Agonizing personal decisions. Almost always, in all of the women that I know personally, brought about by one of three things. Extraordinary economic hardship, like I have no idea how, and a father who will not be present. I don't know how I'm going. I, How? Right? A family system that doesn't support them because they got pregnant out of wedlock. Or third and finally, a situation of domestic unsafety, domestic violence, and not wanting a child to be brought into that circumstance. What business of it is yours, Samuel Alito? Not just the woman who's brought a pregnancy to full term, but any of the women that fall into those three categories and so many others. None ya, as the kids say, none ya business. When we come back, we're going to talk a bit about the opioid decision. I'll share a little clip from me on Fox and Friends back in the day. And yeah, I mean that Fox and Friends. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. Join us, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842.
No president has ever consulted more widely or talked with more people from more backgrounds to seek input about a Supreme Court nomination.
Are you crying? Are you crying?
Talking in my sleep at night, making myself crazy. Wrote it down and read it out, hoping it would save me.
Too many times,
my love, he makes it feel like nobody else, nobody else. But my love,
welcome back, Wisconsin. It's Debate Thursday. We'll be talking about it. Are you watching? Why are you watching? Blood sport? Or to hear policies? Stay tuned. We'll be asking you all those questions and so many more, sharing some of the rules, what's different about it, all at 3:30 today. I'm going to be joined by Rob Henken at top of the hour. But right now, we've been talking about the Supreme Court. It dismissed a case as improvidently granted related to abortion earlier today, which basically means, no, oops, we didn't mean to take that up. We'll probably decide this later, which scares the bejiggers out of me. And I just wanted to emphasize what one of our texters pointed out, and this is Jeff from Shorewood. Thanks, Jeff. Every bit of this, every bit of the abortion debate and the Dobbs decision itself is fundamentally about one fact, and that's the presumption of personhood prior to birth. And that presumption of personhood in many states as early as 5 weeks, and I mean many states that have banned abortion, when it is a mass of cells, that is not scientific consensus. And so on what basis would one presume personhood before birth, especially at, say, 5 or 6 weeks when we've got a mass of cells? That's not science. Then what, wait a minute, what are we searching for? Why would, what would dictate that we must assume personhood? That's religion. So at the root of this debate is whether someone else's religion gets to determine your health care. So I want everybody to ask themselves, does someone else's religion get to determine your health care? Because let me tell you this much, if they'll come for my health care, they'll come for yours. What if all of a sudden a majority of the Supreme Court are all practicing Jehovah's Witnesses and they say nobody gets any health care or any health interventions at all ever because we've got to give it to God? Why does someone else's religion get to determine your health care? And oh, by the way, I always have to bring this one up. all this hubbub from the Christian right about this, which includes things like don't have sex before marriage. Sex is only for procreation. How about this then? Where's the decision from the Supreme Court where they say, well, of course insurance plans don't have to cover Viagra and other erectile dysfunction drugs if they want to refuse to provide that unless a man is married and he and his wife can conceive. Why not that then? Hmm?
But they have such great bathtub commercials.
I like a Cialis. I mean, how did the bathtubs get on the horizon, like on the mountaintop horizon? It's very, do they plumb up there?
No, the laborers bring them up there, then fill
the
them
laborers
up with water.
Bring, yes.
Yeah, but there's, they advertise for that, and it's, you can get that through the, through being in the military.
Mifepristone, no. I mean, granted, the Supreme Court actually said, yes, we're going to keep that on the market. I mean, follow this out. If your religion gets to dictate my health care, or if someone else's religion gets to dictate your health care, where do we draw the line? I'm so over it. Let's talk about the opioids for a minute. Well, I'll give Karina a shot at it. She's very patient. Hi, Karina. What do you have to say?
Hi. I have to say, you know, I listened today, one of the greatest veterinarian from Wisconsin talking about female as a mammalian. So I'm a mammal, but my fetus is a person.
Yeah.
Make it sense, please.
Yeah, I can't, Karina. Thanks so much for listening and calling. Please drive safely. Well, and Robert from McFarland pointing out they don't think it's someone else's religion. They think it's the one true religion. Well, isn't that the problem? I remember asking my folks this question when I was a little tyke. You'll all be shocked to hear that I was pretty precocious. Why do people go to hell if they're good people simply because they don't believe our set of faith beliefs? They couldn't answer that. And I went, there must be something here then.
Why is that atheist doing something good just out of the pure being good?
And of course, the problem is this isn't a religious democracy. It's not. Otherwise, why not Sharia law? Why not require women to be cloaked head to toe and cover their entire bodies because they shouldn't really be able to control their bodies because my religion is offended by women's skin showing or even their eyes. Please put a veil over your eyes, which we used to do, by the way, in church. Where does the line get drawn? Let me tell you what. I don't need Samuel Alito, Clarence Thomas, Brett Kavanaugh, Amy Coney Barrett, or Neil Gorsuch telling me what my religious beliefs need to be. Shame. Shame. But let's talk about opioids. In March of 2018, as Milwaukee County's Corporation Counsel, I filed a lawsuit against the opioid manufacturers and distributors, including Purdue Pharma. To date, that lawsuit has netted Milwaukee County the largest amount of settlement monies in the history of Wisconsin. It is now racking up over $180 million. We deployed that money in Milwaukee County, and it's getting deployed in jurisdictions across the state, in those jurisdictions that themselves followed my lead and also filed suit to do things like harm reduction vending machines, right, that have naloxone for free, increasing the number of treatment beds in our behavioral health services, education, outreach, prevention, all sorts of things. We're saving lives because of that money. Today, the Supreme Court determined that the proposed settlement coming out of the Purdue bankruptcy is not legal because it included a liability shield for the Sackler family who used to own Purdue Pharma. The Sackler family are some of the worst criminals, murderers in our nation's history. They knew that they were killing people. They didn't care. They sold it anyways. And not a single one of them has ever spent a minute in jail, nor will they. They're probably all going to die billionaires. Billionaires where they built that money on the backs of dead Americans, your dead family members and friends, coworkers, community members. I'm very torn about that decision from the Supreme Court. It was a really interesting conflagration of justices. You had Justice Gorsuch joined by Justices Thomas, Alito, Amy Coney Barrett, and Ketanji Brown Jackson concluding that bankruptcy court settlement is improper. It's going to impact other massive class actions. For example, one between the Boy Scouts of America and the victims of sex abuse. The deal would have required the Sacklers, the family, to pay up to $6 billion over 18 years, with almost $4.5 billion due in the first 9 years. But the problem here is this, and I'm going to put this in really blunt terms. More people are going to die because they kicked this settlement. Because those monies aren't going to get into the communities that need the money. And I thought it might be an interesting framework, a note, to take a listen to my interview on Fox and Friends from way back in the day. Let's see, this is me on March 16th, 2018. I believe this was the very day after we announced our lawsuit. Let's take a listen.
Well, Milwaukee is taking on 13 drug companies in the opioid fight. The county's top attorney suing them for the damages from the devastating toll opioids have had there. Prosecutors say 336 people died from opioids in Milwaukee County last year. That number doubled from 5 years ago. Joining us now is Milwaukee County Corporation Counsel Margaret Dawn. Margaret, thank you very much for being here. So, first of all, tell us about the approach you're taking. This is not just about drug dealers on the street. You're going to the source. Tell us about it.
Right. We think that, you know, if you're a drug pusher on the street or a Fortune 50 company, if you're complicit in taking the lives of Milwaukee County residents and citizens, we're going to come after you. So on Wednesday, we filed a civil lawsuit against 13 of this nation's largest opioid manufacturers and distributors to seek injunctive relief as well as monetary damages and assistance in repairing our communities from the devastation that these businesses intentionally have wreaked on Milwaukee County.
So, Margaret, let me make a comparison here. So, a layperson, I say, okay, is this similar to suing a gun manufacturer if it's the person selling it or giving it was doing something illegal or improper, like a doctor overprescribing? Why is it the fault of the drug maker if it is used improperly? Because there are reasons why these drugs are out there for legitimate purposes.
Well, let me start with the analogy to a gun manufacturer. If a gun manufacturer sold you a gun and told you, don't worry, it won't harm you, then you might have a claim. That's the actual analogy here. These manufacturers knew that they were making an inherently very addictive, very dangerous drug. And instead of being truthful about that, they intentionally lied. And they created shell industry groups and paid off physicians to tell other physicians that these drugs, even if used long term, did not pose a significant risk of addiction. And that was simply false. And that's truly the gravamen of our claims.
Interesting point. Definitely. We're going to read a statement briefly from the Healthcare Distribution Alliance, which represents the drug distributors. They say this in response. Those bringing lawsuits would be better served addressing the root causes rather than trying to redirect blame through litigation. So they're saying we make a drug, we put it out there, and people misuse it or abuse it. That's not necessarily our fault. Your claim is they're misrepresenting the effects of the drug, formally or informally?
Formally, they in industry statements, in their education for doctors and physicians, in studies that they published, they claimed that these drugs were simply not addictive. And as many of your viewers, I'm sure, well know, that have family, friends, co-workers that are struggling with addictions with these medications, that was simply false. Let me further say, to the gentleman that provided the industry commentary, I find that surprising since his clients have already accepted blame for this epidemic. In fact, McKesson, the largest drug distributor in the United States, paid over $150 million in a settlement in 2017. But I think the bigger picture here is that we wouldn't be sitting here, we wouldn't be having this discussion if the drug distributors and manufacturers obeyed the law, specifically the Controlled Substances Act. They didn't. These drugs have poured into our communities. And when Congress relaxed the regulatory structure in 2016, after significant lobbying by these companies, we've had no choice but to seek justice in the courts.
You know,
and every American should take some hope in that we can hold even the largest companies accountable for their wrongdoing.
Margaret Dawn, we have to leave it right there. Big problem. You're tackling it. Thank you.
Speaking of mental health, addiction, and the overall wellness of our communities, our state, and our country, when we come back, I'm going to talk about what Joe Biden is doing to help us all stay healthier together, how to combat substance abuse, and reduce the number of gun deaths in this country. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Just listen to the show. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. If you want to join us, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. It's one of the things that bugs me about today's Supreme Court is that they sort of claim fidelity to certain theoretical approaches to reading the law. Textualism, whatever the heck that means.
That's the issue of stare decisis.
Except when it's not. Textualism, this care for life. But it's grotesquely inconsistent. It's the lives of some but not others. It's the freedoms, certain freedoms for certain people but not others. All the while, taking handouts from billionaires with cases before their court. How do you, you're illegitimate. Tomorrow, I'll walk you through some of the major cases of this term, the ones that are decided and not decided, and some of what the public polling on that is, because it's so important. And by the way, they usually get all their decisions done before July 1st. That ain't happening. You know that they're about to unleash all of their remaining decisions because the day before the last day, so on like the eve of when all of the remaining decisions are going to drop, Chief Justice Roberts will get up on the bench and say, like, tomorrow's the last day, folks. Pay attention. I'm about to strip away more of your rights. He doesn't actually say that.
It's subtext, though. That's the important
subtext.
That's
good subtext. Yeah, mm-hmm. Again, you look at the raft of decisions today, opioids, clean air, abortion, how federal agencies enforce their regulations. All these things, every decision today, except for the abortion decision, and just if you sort of did the batting average on this Supreme Court, and are they helping to shore up and protect life, generally everybody's life, everybody's freedoms, no matter what demographic group you may or groups you may belong to? No, they're not. They're batting about 800 for corporations, rich folks, white men. If you don't believe me, just ask Justice Brett Kavanaugh, because bribery is fine. It's okay to bribe government officials. Just do it after the official's done the thing that you'd like and call it a tip. I don't think I've ever gotten a $13,000 tip, Brian.
I've known servers who've gotten $1,000 tips before. I've gotten, you know, a couple hundred bucks here and there. One dude got out of the car in the middle of a weekday and said, give me $100 and he's also been driving with a snifter in his hand and a couple cubes. Mm. And he's like, hey, give me the best table in the house while he's getting the valet to take care of it. I'm like, okay, I pocketed it. I walked into the empty room and I said,
best table.
Can you let this guy sit wherever he wants? And they're like, yeah, sure.
Cool. Yeah. I racked up, what, 180 million plus for Milwaukee County? Trust me, none of those.
You didn't get a finder's fee?
No.
That's not how that works?
No, weird. I just do the job because I, you know, government. It's called public service.
Well, then I know some people who would call you a sucker.
His name's Donald Trump. And actually, you're mostly a sucker, not only if you work in public service, but if you sign up for the military and die, then I don't get it because there was nothing in it for you. Day 19, Joe Biden's top 100. Here's what Joe Biden has done for mental health. He allocated $150 million to set up, implement, and run the 988 suicide hotline with 24/7 mental health crisis support. The emergency service through calls, texts, and other chats had over 600,000 contacts in the month of May alone. You can get it in Spanish. They've got a subnetwork if you're LGBTQIA. Saving lives. Joe Biden saving lives. The Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, which Joe Biden spearheaded, expands the existing program called the Certified Community Behavioral Health Clinic. It's a standards-based set of 9 mental health services that clinics in participating states can adopt. If you're certified, you get federal funding to offset the cost of care. And guess what? CCBHCs must provide care regardless of a patient's ability to pay. They must provide 24/7 crisis care support. And they must provide comprehensive behavioral health care. Joe Biden provided $500 million to public schools to increase mental health services. An additional $500 million to fund grants for a training pipeline to help increase the number of school mental health counselors, social workers, and psychologists with an emphasis on increasing diversity. $1 billion through Title IX-A to improve learning conditions and to develop positive school climates through evidence-based practices. Oh, what are those evidence-based practices? Just ask the Heritage Foundation. We don't want evidence-based practices. We want to tell them what the outcome needs to be and then tell scientists to figure out how to, you know, work backwards and make the studies come to the conclusions we'd like. $250 million for programs to increase awareness among school-age kids about mental health issues and to connect them to needed resources outside of schools. Joe Biden requires the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services to provide guidance to states on how to increase access to mental health through telehealth. Wow, is that needed? Everyone that I know, I don't think I know a single person, myself included, who hasn't had some kind of mental health challenge. And because of the small supply and the waiting lines to get in to see psychologists and psychiatrists, telehealth is absolutely essential. Joe Biden's getting that done for you and your family. $80 million in grants to primary care pediatricians to have fast access to mental health specialists for their child patients. Yes. I'll talk more about this in the next coming hour, but up very next, after news, weather, and sports, is my good friend and yours, Rob Henken, the president of the Wisconsin Policy Forum. We're going to talk a bit about Medicaid and the legacy that Mr. Henken has left for the state of Wisconsin. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Yeah.
guess what? Who are the suckers?